listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
That you would be.
Wow, it's
right?
Going to be a show today, brother.
Yeah,
I can feel it.
I feel some energy in
good
here.
Good one
so
in store.
Some testosterone is in this room.
Yeah, how can we always end up with all the dudes in one room?
You know what? I don't know. It's just cool. It's just a good thing it's not Pantless Thursday. You know?
Thank God. We're all grateful for
we
that.
We do that
no
one
every once in a while.
It depends on the guests, you know.
Well, now here
bring
we
it
are.
On.
August 24th, and it is a beautiful day here in Los Angeles. It has been all week, hasn't it, Michael?
Yeah, you are so right, Andrew. And what a show we have in
no
store today, right? Seriously.
In studio with us, two amazing talents. They're here to talk to us about their upcoming productions, and we can't wait to hear all about them.
And then let's not wait any longer. Let's say a quick hello to Blake Boyd and Robert Stanley.
Yeah.
Here you are, guys.
Thank you very much, baby. Thank you very much.
Boy, I tell you, what great shows we're going to talk about here today. I can't wait to get back to them. Obviously, lots of good stuff going on here in L.A. And, Michael, before we do that, we should pay our bills so they keep us on the air.
What we should indeed.
Let's thank our sponsors.
Okay. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed. Yep. And we encourage our listeners to log on to Performing Arts Live to find out about some of the shows that we're going to talk about today, as well as virtually everything else in Los Angeles.
Of course we would, Michael. But before we do that, before we dig into the meat of our show, I want to know, how was your week? Did you see any great theater?
I did not.
No theater.
I did
week
not.
From
I
Michael.
Have been
rare.
Kind of restricted in what I can do.
No.
So I had to miss the opening of Hamilton, which you know that because you went. We were going to go together, and I had to pull out of it.
That's right.
And another a concert by our guest from last week.
Of course.
Levi Christ, who was the Tony Award winner for Million Dollar Quartet on Broadway.
And a great performer, great pianist,
and
great
I was
singer.
Sick about it. I waited up until 7:30, and to notify them, they said, just by 7:30, tell us what you're doing. I'm not coming.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, me too.
That was obviously something you were looking forward to.
You know what
to.
I did do, however? I had time to look at some things on the DVR that I'm interested in, and they are fascinating. It's a fascinating subject matter. Tyler Henry, do you know who this is?
I don't.
21, not even 21. I think he's 20 years old, and he is LA's go-to psychic medium.
Wow. I tried to get into that. It didn't work out for me.
Well, no one believed you.
That's right.
No, seriously. And he interviews, his mother drives him around to all of the appointments that are scheduled for him.
Wow.
And they are celebrity appointments, generally speaking. Not of amazing note, but,
right.
You know, those that might be a little bit more familiar to someone of that age via television.
Wow.
So, and the rule of thumb with him is that he does not know where he's going or who he's reading. And when the door opens, when he arrives, 9 times out of 10, he absolutely doesn't know who he is by recognition, you know, physically or once they say their name.
Wow.
Yeah. So they may be Eva Longoria from Desperate Housewives or, you know, that kind of person. This kid is so in tune with whatever spirituality is in the room at the time.
Wow.
And these people, these celebrities, they put aside their celebrity status in this thing.
Wow.
And they, once he gets going and starts naming names and talking about what the spirit is in the room and what they're trying to convey to them, it just, all of them end up crying at the end.
My
they're just a mess.
And what's the young man's name again?
Tyler Henry.
Tyler Henry, wow.
And he's a remarkable young guy. I mean, you've got to catch it, actually. I forget what night it's on, but it's super interesting.
Fantastic.
And yeah, I mean, everything is different because he's talking to different people in every show. So, yeah.
And do you remember what channel it's on?
It's ABC, I think.
Okay.
Or Fox.
Very cool.
Sounds like a Fox show. Probably so. Well, that's what I did. That took up some of my my free time.
And that's great. And obviously, of course, Spamalot has opened for 3 Spamalot. Theatricals. And
yes,
is doing very well from what I understand.
Amazing. Yeah. The Huffington Post just came out with the most extraordinary review of it. Not that the others haven't been, because they've all been over the top, but they said this is absolutely a must-see show in Los Angeles.
Wow.
It started off with a reviewer who said he had seen several productions of it, but he had never seen one like this before.
Great. Well, that's amazing. And obviously, 3D always does such great work. How can people get tickets for that, Michael?
They simply go to 3dtheatricals.org online, and it's very simple. The page will come up. You'll see the season. You click on the ticket button. Boom, you're in.
Excellent. Obviously, you know, Spamalot.
At the Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts this week is our last week there through Sunday.
It's impossible to leave that show and not feel great. And obviously, our good buddy Mark Ginsburg is in that.
Yes.
We wish him all the best as
yes,
well.
Indeed.
But now we should turn our attention to our first guest on the show with us this afternoon. Equally adept at both comedy and drama and dramatic roles, he has enjoyed a diverse and rewarding career in film, television, and theater in Los Angeles.
His breakthrough role came starring opposite Sinbad in Disney's First Kid as CIA Agent Dash, followed by Disney's Rocket Man, and starring roles in Honeymoon and Space Marines, as well as his recent films, Out of Time and Toto.
You've seen his work in Beethoven's Third, The Cable Guy, Dark Planet, Raiders of the Sun, and Dune Warriors. He has voiced several video games, created the role of Tucker in Tucker Jim Bob in the animated film sequel, The Brave Little Toaster Goes to School, and is the voice of Safety Kid on Safety Kid on the Net.
For television, he has had guest appearances on the Showtime series Shameless, ER, Seventh Heaven, VIP, News Radio, The Watcher, and The Agency, and a recurring role in Pensacola. TV movie credits, include Confessions, Two Faces of Evil, he must have been about you and me, Saved by the Bell, and Gunsmoke 2.
In Los Angeles?
I did not know there was a Gunsmoke 2.
It came right after Gunsmoke 1, so it worked
really?
Out.
Really?
Really?
I'm a big Gunsmoke fan, actually. That's cool to me. In Los Angeles, he has starred in roles at the Odyssey Theater, particularly in A Month in the Country, and as Burton in Burn This.
Other L.A. productions include director John Frank Levy's Marshlight and Alice Carter's Cabaret, both at the Ventura Court Theater, as well as Maids of Honor, the role of Christian in Cyrano de Bergerac at the Knightsbridge, and the Tiffany Theater productions of Staccato and Class of 1990.
He was a 2-year title holder in boxing at SMU, where he began work in modeling and commercials to put himself through school for his business studies. After graduation, he moved to L.A., landed his professional debut role as a guest star on the series Charles in Charge, and the rest is history.
He joins us today, ladies and gentlemen, to talk about his current role as producer and actor in Joanne Moscone's urban hit romantic comedy You Love That I'm Not Your Wife, completing the casting process for its off-Broadway run at the Steve and Marie Segaris Black Box Theater at the Players Theater Complex in New York. Please welcome, give a tremendous warm welcome to the very talented Blake Boyd.
Welcome, Blake. Welcome.
Well, thank you. That's rather humbling to hear all that. Thank you.
They show up just for you every time. I don't know what's going
exactly.
on. Matt, what a great title for this show. I laugh just hearing the title.
Well, it's interesting. It comes from, and by the way, thank you for the warm introduction.
You're
thank
welcome.
You for
glad
me
to have
it's
you.
It's really
man.
Great to be back on your show. And, Joanne Moscone wrote this play. We did it as a workshop production about 3 years ago. And it worked well. The title, You Love That I'm Not Your Wife, comes from a line in the play where one of the characters, and it's based on couples and relationships in Los Angeles, which is somewhat unique, we believe, to other parts of the country. And the one character is saying, I love you. And she says, no, you love that I'm not your wife.
Wow.
Which is somewhat wise and poetic.
Yeah.
No, you love that you can't have me. That's
right.
Where it comes from, actually.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's been here in Los Angeles, had a successful, I worked with you on one run of it, and then there was a second one, too.
No, we weren't able to do the second one, but we're going to do it in New York, opening November 3rd, as you said, at the Steve Marie Segaris Theater,
right.
The Players Theater, in New York, in The Village. And we're very excited
Fantastic.
About it. Fantastic. Run about 3 weekends, and hopefully get an off-Broadway run in 2018. 2015. Joanne Moscone's done that before with plays she's written and directed and produced, so the
odds
are good.
Wouldn't this be considered off-Broadway as well?
Well, it's off-Broadway.
Oh, it's off-off.
It's a smaller theater. Now,
yeah, 50 seats in the... It's a part of the complex of the Players Theater.
Downstairs at the Players Theater, right. Which we may end up in the early part of 2018, is an off-Broadway space.
So. Got it. Well, wow. Then it is, technically.
Yeah, it is.
Well, now, so that's interesting to me because, I mean, obviously some of the best work I've ever seen in New York is at those kind of venues that are prepping for a Broadway run and that sort of thing. What is the difference in taking a show from L.A. to New York, particularly with content when you're based on an L.A. character in the show? Do you find a positive reception, a negative reception?
Well, actually, we did this before on another show that Michael and I worked on, Brad Godfrey's Women Are Crazy Because Men Are Assholes, which began...
Just a subtle title.
I know, subtle title, exactly. Kind of says it all right there. We ran for years. We ran in Chicago and San Diego, and then we took it to New York. So to your point, taking an L.A.-based show set in Los Angeles to New York, and you know what? The reception was quite wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah, we had many years and many runs. I had done, I think, prior to that, about 170 performances to refine it. And with the director actually in the show and at every performance, you really fine-tune things.
So I'll bet you do.
You get there,
he was actually in the show, but he never... That was never announced.
Yeah,
part
he had a different name. So he
was sort of...
We would out him sometimes at the end of a run in some venue, and he would... And people were like, oh, my God, that guy created the whole thing. And
well, that show, which Blake is talking about, plus this other show, actually, I think it draws a very particular crowd of younger people, which is what we want for younger people to come
Absolutely.
Into the theater. And for those who might say, or maybe their girlfriend is dragging the guy, and they don't know what they're going to see, and they think it's going to be some, you know, uninteresting evening of theater, it's quite the reverse. Because
actually, to your point, Michael, very good point, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we get a lot of people in You Love That I'm Not Your Wife that said, you know, I've never been to the theater before.
Wow.
I want to come back, and I want to bring my boyfriend.
Wow.
And so, we, you know, as I tell a lot of my friends that do quote-unquote serious theater, you know, more I don't know, maybe a little bit more...
Artsy-fartsy.
You know what? I don't want to say that. But yeah. Maybe heavier stuff. Yeah. We get them into the theater and we let y'all do the heavy lifting. Yeah. We got to somehow get the millennials into the theater. And we're good at that.
Now, what would you call this? Would you call this a dramedy with heart kind of thing? Is it a comedy or more of a dramatic piece?
Well, none of the characters in our show think that it's a comedy. We're playing hardball.
Interesting.
The reaction from the audience tells us that it is a comedy.
Which, of course, is the truest form of comedy.
Exactly.
I love that. That's fantastic.
But I would say it's a dramedy.
Yeah. It's fantastic when you've lived in Los Angeles for as long as we have in this room, you do get very myopic in your view of relationships. And when you realize how different a Midwestern relationship is or a New York relationship, you kind of realize that while the world has gotten very small, there are still big differences between one place and the other. And I think when you get to see it from the outside, that's always such a positive thing to be able to laugh at yourself a little bit, too. So.
Well, in Los Angeles, everybody here, in my opinion, and certainly in the entertainment industry, is trying to accomplish something.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe in Dallas or Chicago or Orlando, they're just kind of chilling out and loving life.
Interesting.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
But in L.A., we're trying to do something.
Yeah.
I mean, the gentleman that's we're going to talk to in just a second, I mean, he's shooting a film. He's got to be out of here by a certain time. And that's great. You know, you'll hear about that in a second. But, you know, we're all trying to do the impossible.
This is interesting, too, because obviously here on State of the Arts, we have so many different kind of performers come in. But this is one of the things that I love about it, is somebody who's been through the workshop of a show, to see that then progress to the final performance and take it to a different place and see how it plays. Tell me about the workshopping process and what you liked about that and what changed in the first version of the script versus the version you have now.
Well, that's a very good question.
Thanks. I learned it in radio school. $50,000. That's all they taught me.
Aren't your parents proud?
I got one question. That's right. They won't even admit to me anymore.
Yeah, but they probably brag to their friends about what you're doing. They think it's really cool. It's like everyone wants their kid to be in show business. Everyone loves the fact that I'm in show business, but they don't want their children to go in show
right.
business.
Right. That's exactly. So true.
And so in doing the show on Lancashire, 3 years ago, you basically find out what works and what doesn't. And you may think this is the funniest line, the greatest line, the most true line. Gosh, it's so real, and the actor delivered it so perfectly. And it just doesn't resonate with the audience.
Right.
And so in time, well, to your question about the script, it's just evolved naturally. Some of the roles evolve with the actor playing it. Oh, we didn't know that this character was a mixed race bisexual, but he is now because the actor that's playing it, we didn't know that this girl is an English healer.
They put their stamp on it.
They put their stamp on it. And because Joanne Moscone is very open, one day, and I posted this on Facebook, it was great, she cut 18 pages out of the script.
Wow.
Ugh.
And it, the actors were thrilled.
Right.
But we were more impressed than anything else, because for a writer to say, we don't need it, get rid
That's
of
so
it.
So true.
It's such a discipline, and so many writers don't have that.
And you have to be able to step outside yourself to be able to do that.
That's true.
A tough thing to let go of part
That's
of your
true.
Baby.
Yeah. Yes, and most people don't have that, as he said. The ego gets in the way there. But you're wearing a couple hats now for the New York run. You're a producer.
Mm-hmm.
You are casting, helping with the casting. You said in Los Angeles, you wrote me a little note about this, and you said, say what you said about the Los Angeles actors not being available to go back to New York.
Oh, exactly. We wanted to take a couple of actors from Los Angeles to New York. And you know what? When we approached them, they were very excited. And we wanted them, and they wanted to do it within the logistics of actually getting to New York, putting yourself up for 5 weeks, six
right.
weeks. It's a whole different ballgame, and they're not able to go.
Yeah.
And that's totally fine. Maybe we'll catch them later on another run, something else. Maybe we come back here, we do it here. But we're very, very fortunate to be able to go live in the city for 6 weeks, do the production. Joanne Moscone is from there.
Right. Hmm.
Her family has a couple of restaurants there, Via Moscone and Monty's Italian restaurants in the village.
Italian so, key word,
yeah,
family.
We're going to be eating some good pasta while we're in New York doing this run.
Well, do you find that is, helps you in any sort of way that you're in these positions? I mean, you have a little more control and an invested interest in the product.
Well, sure. Well, the writer, director, producer, Joanne Moscone, can do anything she wants.
Right.
She just has to sign a contract with a theater, and she can change anything. And as you know, the writer has the utmost authority in the theater, but she's also the writer, the director. And so we don't have a hierarchical mm-hmm. structure. It's Joanne's way. Or we don't do it. But
right.
she's a lovely woman who's done this many times before. She's produced and written like 70 shows in Los
wow.
Angeles.
Yeah.
And so it's a very lean chain of command. And I'm a co-producer, which means I do whatever she asks me to do, and I clean the bathrooms.
and an actor.
Yeah. Well,
and
I'm
a very good
show.
Actor.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
The man we're talking to is the very talented Blake Boyd. And the show is called You Love That I'm Not Your Wife, which I think is such a fantastic title. And this show, it has no current L.A. run scheduled.
No.
But it will be in New York from November 3rd through the 18th. And obviously, if you want tickets, you can Google that show, or you can always call 212-475-1449.
You can also get tickets at the playerstheater.com website.
Obviously a great group, and they've done such fantastic work in the past as well, so great history and legacy of great theater being done there.
Absolutely. Well, it's a fun evening. It is a fun evening, so I hope you have great success in New York.
Well,
and
you.
I think that New York audiences are probably much more hip, I must say, than Los Angeles.
I think they love to laugh at LA on occasion
and
too,
we'll get it.
Well, we don't take ourselves too seriously as performers, as actors. We're telling a story about people at the end of the day who are in Los Angeles. And so, as I was telling this young man before we came on the air, if we do our job, the New York audience will have more empathy, perhaps a little bit more understanding of what it's like to go through what we go through here.
Yeah.
Well said.
Absolutely. Right. Shall we move on to a live arts calendar, Blake?
I think so.
Can you hang around with us for a little
I'd
bit
love
more,
to.
Buddy?
Thank you,
buddy. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you a little more here in just a bit. But first, we should move on and talk about a beautiful and thought-provoking show coming to us in September at the Fountain Theater, Runaway Home.
Indeed. 3 years after Hurricane Katrina, the unhealed wounds of New Orleans' Lower Ninth Ward continue to fester. Runaway Home tells the story of 14-year-old Callie, who embarks on a journey to pick through the wreckage of what used to be her life.
While the rest of the country's attention drifts, the neighborhood's residents are left alone to repair the damage from the inside out. As their attempts at renewal of life leave a path of destruction in their wake, the young runaway bears witness to what the floodwaters have left behind.
Playwright Camps traveled to New Orleans 2 years after Katrina to volunteer, gutting and mucking the process of the stripping homes to the studs and to remove mold. He already had an idea in his head about a runaway girl who collects other the people's garbage, finding meaning in the meaningless, Callie's story was found somewhere in the rubble.
Although lightened with funny moments, the rage, helplessness, and loss that the young girl and her mother share are the core of this play. That is the challenge they both struggle with, to find their way back to each other and home. What happens when people, when they see, aren't seen, and when we don't feel safe? How do you begin to rebuild your life when nobody cares?
Runaway Home runs September 16th through November 5th, with performances on Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., and most Mondays at 8 p.m., with preview performances September 13th, my birthday, through the 15th at 8 p.m.
Tickets range from $20 to $40, and every Monday is Pay What You Want at the Fountain Theater, which is located at 5060 Fountain Avenue in Los Angeles. Secure on-site parking is available for only $5.
And that's amazing.
That is amazing.
Right? In
yeah.
Los Angeles, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Don't miss this powerful show, ladies and gentlemen, that tells the story of confronting loss and cost of moving forward. For reservations and information, call 323-663-1525 or go to the Fountain Theater. Website.
So many amazing stories have come out of New Orleans in the past few years, stories of survival and all that. It really is inspiring, and this show certainly looks to focus in on that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, now we had a great chance to talk with Blake Boyd earlier, and now we should move on here, and we will continue with our amazing guest. I'd like to welcome in our next guest back to the show. We are very glad to have him here with us. In fact, I believe this is true. Robert was the second guest that I interviewed on this show.
Yes,
and
I think
he didn't
you
mock
were
me
right.
or smack me in the head or anything.
Oh,
the
you were
not
smooth.
Here.
You were smooth.
He is a Los Angeles Stage Alliance Ovation Award winner for his performance in the play Barbarians, and also an Outer Critics Circle Award nominee for his roles in A Streetcar Named Desire and Picnic.
Other stage credits include Jack and Jill at the Santa Monica Playhouse, Post Office at the Kirk Douglas Theater in Los Angeles, and national tours of Cotton Patch Gospel, mm-hmm. According to Coyote, and The Rainmaker.
Audiences will remember him from his guest starring roles on such episodic television as Invasion, Melrose Place, Breakthrough, and All My Children.
He's here today to talk about his return to the Edgemar Center for the Arts in Santa Monica, where he is known for his frequent co-starring roles opposite Tana Frederick, an award-winning Los Angeles actress and actually queen of the independent film festivals. Stanley and Frederick co-star in Danny and the Deep Blue Sea, on stage now through September 10th. Please welcome a brilliant performer to the show, Robert Stanley.
Yeah. Thank you. You're a beautiful crowd. I feel the same towards you. You're beautiful. I see you, lady. Nice. Okay.
Welcome, Robert. So great to see you again, man.
Thank you.
Do you ever stop working, brother?
Well,
I had to go rewrite your bio because it was twice as long as a year ago. Unbelievable.
You know how acting is. You're down for a long time, and all of a sudden you come up and you go, okay, now I'm set. Then you're down again, then you're up. It's a mountain.
Well,
right now I'm on top.
You and Miss Frederick seem to be like the, I think I read this somewhere, the Spencer and Tracy couple of Los Angeles.
They call it, yeah, the Spencer right. Tracy and Katherine Hepburn of L.A., sometimes the Clark Gable and Jean Harlow. We're lucky, you know, and they Tana is producing this.
Right.
Her husband, Henry Jaglom, the great yes. filmmaker, is the executive producer, and she's producing it and starring. And this is the third show I've starred with her in, play-wise. I did a film with them called Ovation that was in the movie theaters last
wow.
year. And Tana is, I'm proud to say for her, she is the first female producer of the very first virtual reality narrative series.
Wow.
We've already gone to Cannes and Sundance. Our director, Carl Weathers, is in it, along with Harry Hamlin and Bruce Davis.
Couldn't show it at any other festivals than that.
There you go. Yeah, we wanted to go with the low rent. Yeah, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
so
I'm,
it's a virtual reality-based narrative.
Absolutely. The virtual so cool. reality, you know how it started out? It was like, you know, porn and gamer,
that's
gaming
right. that's
and stuff
exactly
like that.
Right.
But now they're branching off all the options. But Tana is the first female. She's really proud of this, as she should be. And she just put it on her back.
Wow.
Got these delicious celebrities who are like more than happy to do this. I got a good role in it too, which
cool.
I'm happy about. But Carl Weathers, basically,
who is your director on Danny
right.
and
a well-known a well-known person.
Oh
himself,
yeah,
of course,
Mr. Apollo
yeah.
Creed in
right.
Rocky movies, Predator man, he gets his arm blown off. He's Dylan and
well-known to sci-fi fans, of course, as well.
And of course, Happy Gilmore. We can't forget
oh,
that.
You know, one of the best.
He is stupendous. I've probably done about
110 professional plays in my life, but this man has surpassed them all. If any of my former directors are listening, I still love you dearly. This man, they broke the mold with Carl because he played with the Oakland Raiders, you know, before he became...
I didn't know that. Wow.
2 years on the Raiders,
my
Brody.
My goodness.
But he's got that athlete's stamina, that athlete's...
Sure.
And what he did was, the play is about 70 minutes long with no intermission.
Right.
And
it's nice.
Extremely intense, but also very, very funny. And what he did was, in rehearsals, he would have us do a full-out 100% run-through, give us 15 minutes to rest, and do it all over again.
He did two-a-days on you. Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. At first, Tan and I were, like, cursing him. We wanted to, like, slap him upside his head when he didn't see it coming. But I'm going to tell you something. We developed an inner stamina.
I'm sure you did.
Where, as exhausted as we are after, you know, our performance, I could wait 5 minutes and go out and do the whole damn thing all over again.
Well, now I got to tell you, Danny requires that. He demands that, the role of Danny in the show, because Danny in the Deep Blue Sea is about a guttural reaction to life. And as you see Danny, as you meet Roberta, you find out that these people are just desperate, and that desperation has been pent up of them for so long that they do everything 100% because they can't contain it anymore. You know, the saying, there's nothing more dangerous than someone who has nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. And I think that really is both of these characters here.
Wow, well said. They're two of society's outcasts. It's
absolutely.
Self-exile. Shame. S-H-A-M-E. That thing kills more people, whether literally or just the torture they go through. We all have our shame. We have a shame, a dark thing. The thing about these two is they meet in a Bronx bar, a real seedy place. She practically has a death. She just wants to die. She has so much shame. And my character, he turns into one of those thrill fighters. He loves beating people to a pulp. I mean, so much to where the night before, he thinks he probably killed a guy. And he's really tormented by this. And these two meet at their lowest point in life. And the thing is, man, they reveal slowly. Through at first they're very, they give each other cold barbs and they reject each other, and that whole swag bullcrap that you have to do to survive in a rough neighborhood like that. And so they constantly destroy each other verbally, to where they start slowly seeing a little bit of themselves in the other one, and then they slowly start revealing the shame, the big thing that we're all afraid to do. But the thing about these two is they both see enough of themselves in the other person where they accept it. So I believe these two at the end of the play, you wonder, are they going to make it or not? A lot of audience members say there's no way. But you know what? I believe they will, because at the absolute worst, no matter how mean they are to each other physically, it's a very violent play too.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. It's not just intensity. It's very funny. It's a perverse humor. You sit there and go, man, if those two can make it, I know I got
that's
a shot at
it. I think that catharsis is exactly what makes the play. Robert Shanley, of course, is the writer.
John Patrick Shanley.
Sorry, course,
I'm Robert Stanley. You know what? Carl Weathers does that all the time. Carl Weathers.
So we had, who do we have in here doing Danny in the Deep Blue Sea earlier? And I said Robert when I meant to say that too. So I did it twice in a row. But it's funny because Shanley does such a great job of, in the writing of the play, showing that emotions rubbed raw, right? To where you are so raw that you have nothing left except that tenderness that can be violent or it can be just loving. And I think that's the hope, that catharsis, that at the end of the show you go, oh my goodness, these people have a chance after such a horrible beginning. They have a real chance to make it in love, which I think is the part that I love the best about the show.
That's very profound, man. And you know what?
It's the only profound thing I've ever said on the radio. Seriously.
I'm on.
I wrote it down. I thought of it 3 weeks ago. I wrote it down just for this show.
But you know, listen, all in all, there's no intermission. It's about 70 minutes long. The critics have been astounding to us. It's probably one of the best review shows I've ever done.
Yeah.
And Tana, of course, just turns herself inside out to reveal this woman's soul. It's just a joy and an honor to work opposite of her. And Carl's one of those rare directors who he comes to every single show, sits in the audience, and sometimes we'll do pickup rehearsals.
Oh my goodness.
We're getting slightly off. I've never had that in my life.
Really?
This man has got a work ethic like I've never experienced.
Well, now, obviously, you and your co-star are the, I think that's been said very well, the Hepburn and the Tracy of of local theater here, as well as all these other projects that you've done. Virtually every medium you've worked in. I mean, you've done voiceover as well as television as well as film.
But you know what?
Fantastic.
He also is a very good singer, and he does musical theater.
Of course.
Oh, you
which
remember.
Is how I met him.
Yes, you remember. Guys and Dolls. He saw me as Sky Masterson.
Oh, that's, and with whom?
Heather Lunstead. This lady is one of the most golden voices in the whole... You know what? Not only just here in California, she's got a new group called the Beverly Bombshells, and they're like touring over the country.
That's fantastic. Right,
isn't she phenomenal?
Yeah, she is. One of those very, very special. I mean, she's not only beautiful, but she has a voice to go along with
absolutely.
That and the talent.
Well, now
and is a nice person on top.
Absolutely.
And more importantly.
We had talked briefly with Mr. Boyd here earlier about taking plays that are from somewhere else. Of course, this is the exact reverse. You have a New York setting, and you're bringing it here to L.A. How have you found that people respond from an L.A. audience looking at this, which is a very rough New York portrait? It's
and,
very on the
and
waterfront
character,
kind of
by
thing,
the way, so. Which is a truck driver who says something, and she's confused and has a teenage daughter.
Oh yeah,
right, and divorced and guilt ridden.
And she had a very shameful past experience with her father
yes.
too, which
and
makes
that
it
word
even
again,
more
shame. Yeah. Yeah,
shame's a big one in this one.
It is.
It's funny. I can be very specific. We have a lot of people. I mean, all the way up to superstars who come and see this, all the way down to people who kind of go, theater. I've never really seen it before. And I'm going to tell you, this thing is as Bronxian as it is, and as hard as it is, and as non-LA as it is, all cultures come to this and they go, I get it. I could plug my ears and just watch and understand everything that's going on here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? John Patrick Shanley won the Pulitzer Prize for the play Doubt, which became the movie with Meryl Streep.
Of course.
He also wrote the screenplay to Moonstruck with Cher and
Nicolas
Cage. I didn't
know
King.
That.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's very prolific. He's a genius. Carl said, I first read the play and I went, yeah, it's good. I read it a second time. I went, oh. He goes, by the sixth time I read it and working with you guys, he goes, I started thinking, I wonder if Shanley himself is even fully aware of exactly what he's written here. Mm-hmm. Because these levels, remember in the 80s, those wall hangings, you'd stare at them and all of a sudden your eyes would slightly cross and all of a sudden this 3D image would just materialize out
right.
of it. You remember those?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
That's what this play is like. You sit there and you study it and all of a sudden you go, whoa. Whoa. And that's what makes me stay in this business.
We
man.
Recently discussed on the show a one act written by Shanley as well that had this amazing kind of just immediate catharsis in the middle of it, in the same sort of thing, which is very, very different from how Danny and the Deep Blue Sea plays out, because that catharsis is parsed out throughout the show. You get little bits of it, and then in the end, you're left with this idea of anything can happen, which I find interesting. Is that tough to play? When you've played, obviously, you've done a lot of comedic roles as well. Is that tough to play that much drama, that real, that hard every night and not just get exhausted from it?
Well, I'll tell you honestly, I grew up with a guy in Texas, of all places, who is from Zurega, where Danny is from.
Really? Wow.
He basically was this guy. He was self-hating. He would beat up guys to a pulp. Wow. I would watch him. He was my friend, and one time I saw him beat up a guy so bad, I actually pulled away and said, I really am uncomfortable being around somebody who could just do that so remorselessly.
Yeah.
I based my performance on him. His name is John Fitzpatrick from Zurega.
Wow.
So it was easy for me to slip into this. Carl Weathers, he goes, you're such a nice guy and you have a sense. He goes, I saw you your first reading and I went, how do you just slip right into that so effortlessly? It's because I know the guy. I have a deep empathy for this character because he's that guy you see walking down the street sometimes talking to himself and you go, poor sucker, you know, and you go, I don't want anything to do with him. But if you really got to know him and gave him a chance, like in this play, he opens up a whole side of himself that's so vulnerable. By the end of the, well, I don't want to tell you how it ends, but it's, do they get together or do they not? You have to come and find out.
Is that easy to live with because of that empathy you have for Danny? Is it easy to let go of that rage when you leave the theater and walk out feeling good?
When the play is immediately over, Tana usually goes back in her dressing room and has to cry for like about 5 minutes or so. And I don't cry, but I have this thing where I just want to hit somebody.
Yeah.
And it's your body doesn't know you're lying when you really, really commit. And so your body has to go, okay, wind down, wind down.
That's
your body
right.
actually goes through it, you know, when you commit to something as brilliant as this play is. Man.
So a note to listeners, don't go up to Robert Stanley within 5 minutes right after the show.
Right.
Just heads up.
There you
give
go.
Him at least 5 minutes to calm down. I think Danny and the Deep Blue Sea is one of my favorite shows because it was one of my introductions to theater. And it was very real theater at a time where there was a lot of comedy out in films. I thought it was a very real portrait of humanity. And I think this is going to be a great production. I can't wait to see it. So
thank
I'm very
you.
Excited
yeah,
about
me
it.
Too. Yeah. No, I've not seen it. So.
You've heard that great anecdote about Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn when they met, right?
No.
So Katharine, very young Katharine, meets the older Spencer Tracy on the movie set, and she looks at him and she goes, well, my dear Spencer, I believe that I might be a little bit too tall for you. And he looks at her and he says, don't worry, sweetheart, I'll cut you down to size. I love that. I absolutely love that.
And he kept his word, dude.
That's right. One of my favorites of all time. And of course, they produced so many great pieces over the years.
They don't make actors like that.
No, they don't.
Right?
Except for the two we have.
get you
in the studio with us today.
Nice save. Yeah.
Well, so now, obviously, we've talked about a bunch of great shows here today. Michael, I have this picture of L.A. theater that we've been discussing, and there's so many interesting things going on in Los Angeles right now. But one of my favorite things that we've been allowed to see is independent theater that tours. We've seen more and more shows that are picking up and going from one location to a next. For both of you, is that something that you ever saw coming? We talked a little bit about how hard it is to get actors who can leave their home and tour for a while, but so much of L.A. work right now is through tours. Has that been a struggle with your personal lives and kind of balancing that when you have to pick up a show and move it?
You know, I've only toured with one show, and it was for a month here or a few weeks there. But yeah, it's a challenge. You've got to take care of your own housing. In one particular case, we stayed in the producer, writer, director's parents' house. And unfortunately, it was a very large house.
I was going to say, better be a nice house.
Had much less liquor by the time we
never let actors in.
Anyway,
that's right.
It can be a challenge. But this gentleman, Robert, you were on a. You've done several national tours, right?
I've done three. One of them when I was married, and it did wreak a lot of havoc. It really did. But now I'm not married, and it's funny. We're actually thinking of. I forgot to say this. We're actually thinking of possibly touring with Danny and the Deep Blue Sea when we close.
Fantastic.
Here.
Would Carl go with you?
Hey,
I don't know. Doing pickup rehearsals in the middle of Duluth. You know?
I don't know. Carl, he's one of the most dedicated to the art people I've ever known. Wow. But I don't know. He's got a life. He's a busy man. Yeah. Busy. Yeah.
And a great actor as well. Very funny. Very funny. Well, it's interesting to see in shows like this how many young performers get their start on a tour like this. We've certainly seen them with the national tours that come through. In fact, in Hamilton, I believe there was an actor who was picked up at the L.A. Open Call.
Two
actors at the L.A. Open Call, which and they'll then continue with the show past L.A.
And one of the two was just out there auditioning in L.A. for Anything and Everything and was able to get the call to audition for it here. And that was 6 months before it was coming in. And
the one at the Pantages?
Yes.
Wow.
That's the national tour. Wow. So he started with a national tour elsewhere, and then he came into L.A.
Fantastic.
And had no idea, you know, that because he dreamt about it, and there he got the job. So, you know what? Look at what I'm doing. No one's noticed this. This is not just one piece of paper, but
radio innovation
standing alone by itself.
That's it. We got to move to television just so people can see this.
Yes.
You know? Ladies and gentlemen, the show we were just talking about is Danny and the Deep Blue Sea, truly a great piece of theater, starring Robert Stanley, who is we're glad to have him here, and of course a good friend of the show. But gentlemen, and this is truly scary, it is time for...
And now, Embarrassing Moments.
The fear that is welling up inside of our guest right now,
Harry,
Michael.
You know.
You guys know a little bit about what we do here since you've been on the show before. We always ask our established performers, those of whom who have been through so many different things, to come up with something that might teach our younger listeners that just because something happens in live performance or on a film set, you don't have to hide your head in shame and run away forever and ever. You will get through it and life will go on. Blake, do you have something for us?
Oh, do I ever. And Michael Sterling was in the audience.
Oh, no.
When it happened. Opening night. 3 years ago, You Love That I'm Not Your Wife.
Yeah.
I sing in this production, and I dance in this production. Now, I have not done a lot of training in singing and dancing, but I can do it, and I will commit to anything, you know. Well, we didn't do a sound check before the show. And there's a point where I go to my phone, and I turn on music that I'm going to karaoke sing to my lovely significant other on the balcony in Italy. And I go to the prop phone, and I turn it on, and a different song comes on over the theater. You remember that, Michael?
Oh, yes.
No. Oh, no.
Michael was in the audience.
So you did.
We were packed.
You did a serenade to Britney Spears' Toxic?
Fortunately, the actress that I was working with had a very strong musical theater background and happened to know the song.
Oh, my God.
Which was fine. We were going to get through it until it stopped. And then the right song came back.
Oh, that's brutal.
And so you just keep going. You realize that, hey, things happen the way they're supposed to. And I have a good story to tell. But, you know, you make it. And then you basically, when something like that happens, you just give up. You let it go. And the rest of the show was actually quite wonderful.
And I'll bet amped up.
Nothing can...
That's right.
You let it go at that point.
You got through it.
You get through it, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
The beauty of live theater.
That's right.
Right? Oh, never the same performance.
Absolutely.
Robert?
I do have one.
He says.
About 12 years ago, I think, I did a production of Godspell Live Theater, of course. And it was in an intimate house. I mean, the front row literally was like a foot away. You could reach out and touch someone.
Now, who are you playing?
I'm playing the bad guy, Judas.
Very nice.
And it's that big climactic point where Judas and Jesus are screaming at each other and having it out. And right then, I don't know who was more embarrassed, the lady it happened to or us. All of a sudden, we hear this, and I'm screaming, "You!" And all of a sudden, bop, 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 oh dear, oh my! And I'm in so in character, and I'm the guy playing Jesus stops for a second. And all of a sudden, I see that glimmer in his eye, like he's going to break. And I'm going, "Oh no!" Because where I take my pride is, I never break.
Oh no!
Uh-oh! I glance down. The whole audience is howling at this point. This poor woman couldn't control her bowels, and she was pooping herself, and she was literally in the front row going, "Oh dear, oh my," and the audience is so uncomfortable, they're laughing uncomfortably. At that point, I looked at the guy playing Jesus, and I, for the first time ever, we broke and started laughing so hard, and the whole cast is howling. The audience, the lady finally makes it to the bathroom, but because we surrendered and we just laughed at the moment and gave up to it, they loved us all the more. They gave us a standing ovation for like about a minute and a half, and then we carried on with the show.
Wow. So oh, there you poor go. Woman, too.
She was the one who was really embarrassed.
Yeah.
But
thing.
Oh, dear. Oh, my.
Wait. And that woman is here with us.
That's right. We brought her back. Let's bring her in.
I was meaning to get revenge on you. Young man.
Rough
wow.
crowd. Rough
what
crowd.
I got to tell you, that is amazing. I mean, obviously, continuing through something like that is so difficult, but if you don't do it, you cheat the rest of your audience, so you've got to find a way to get through
True.
That. Sounds like the best way to do it.
Well, you know, you and I have had a couple when we were acting. Right?
Have you? I don't believe you've ever lost control of your bowels on this.
No,
on this
not
like thank goodness. I'm so glad to hear. You have one that I particularly like, if for no other reason that involves nudity.
Uh-oh.
And we always give extra points for nudity on this
photos?
Show. So fortunately, before cell phones. Michael, you would you like to tell it?
I will. Yes, based on that. When I was younger and starting in the theater, in the musical theater, I started in a production that I did everywhere with different stars in the show. And it was during a time when theater in the round was very, very popular here in California and throughout the rest of the country. The show was Bye Bye Birdie. And I grew up in this show. I was you know, very young and played one of the kids and the teenagers, and just graduated into the older role of the boyfriend, Hugo Peabody. But at this stage, I was early on with the show. So I had done it with the very famous George Gobel, a comedian of the past. And I had was in a production with Jerry Van Dyke and Dick Van Dyke. Dick Van Dyke came in on some performances, and Jerry came in on the other performances. And it was at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, which is where they used to have the Oscars. And they had transformed it into a theater in the round at that time. So, you know how theater in the round works. Everything's coming up aisles, and there's, you know, kind of bare minimum sets on the stage because you can't have any obstruction with the audience. And this was a 3,000-seat theater in the round. So the opening number in Bye Bye Birdie takes place in New York at a train station. The train has Elvis, the Elvis character, the Birdie character, on the train. And it is going to Sweet Apple, Ohio. And when the transition takes place in this production, they did a strobe light. And to allow all of us who were now, you know, young people in New York, dressed in New York clothes, underdressed with Sweet Apple, Ohio clothes. So the strobe light was the change that had to be done in 15 seconds. And the runners come up the aisles, and they're grabbing clothes off of you, and they're running back out. And that all happened, and I felt good about it. And all of a sudden, I felt really cold from the waist down. And I looked down, and I was standing there in my dance belt and a red sweater and a white shirt, and I was waving an American flag.
What patriotism.
Man. So I was mortified. I mean, I had to run off the stage and take care of it.
How many seats in the theater?
3,000. Oh. So one section got their money's worth two times.
Everything skyrocketed for the show after that.
I will go where you go.
That's got to be the best I've ever heard.
Oh, my God.
So obviously, ladies and gentlemen, if Michael can survive that, you can get through whatever happens in your career
and
as well.
And you, sir, what about you?
Well, I've told my favorite story when I was playing King, when I was in King Lear playing Kent, and at the end of the show, this was on tour, and I was offered a crown at the end as King Lear lay dead. And my daughter from the back of the Summerstock audience at 2 years old stands up and goes, "Yay, Daddy, you won!" And everybody turns around to look at my daughter. But my favorite overall is when I was touring in Scotland. I was touring with a show that did Scotland and London and Paris, and I was very, very young, 20, I think, at the time. And my beautiful bride was in the show with me, and at one point, an actor just failed to come on. He'd gotten lost in the new theater. We're doing a new theater every night, and couldn't find the entrance, and he just didn't come on. So the other actor who was in the scene with me, it was supposed to be three of us, and it was just the two of us on stage. We each traded off his lines in fear, desperately hoping the other one would know the next one, because we only knew about half of his lines as we were going through it, and fortunately got through it that way. And people at the end of the show came up and said, "That was such an interesting concept the director used." I want to go, "There's no concept," but you can't say that. You say, "Yes, the director was fantastic. What a brilliant mind behind that piece." So the shows we've told you about today, of course, some really great theater out there for you to see. If you're on the West Coast, do not miss Carl Weathers directing Danny and the Deep Blue Sea. That show is running from July 1st all the way up through September 10th. So still a good chance to see it.
And if you are on the East Coast in November 3 through the 18th, at the Steve and Marie Segaris Black Box Theater at the Off-Broadway Players Theater will be in performance. And that is something that our guest, Blake Boyd, is producing, co-producing and also co-starring in. So tickets and or further information, call 212-475-1449, and you can set it up in advance.
And obviously, the Fountain Theater has some great shows going on. Obviously, if you go to performingartslive.com, you're going to find out more about lots of these shows. And for Danny and the Deep Blue Sea, you can always call for reservations, 310-392-7327. Or you can just Google the name of the show, and obviously that will pop up very quickly here in Los Angeles.
Also, you can go to the online ticketing source, EdgeMarCenter.com. org.
And this is a great piece, too, because it's 85 minutes. I believe there's no intermission in this. Is that
no
correct?
Intermission. It's so actually 70 minutes. And the tickets are $25. It's Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 4 p.m. And the address is 2437 Main Street in Santa Monica.
Don't miss this piece. It's going to be a great piece. And obviously, if you're in New York, be sure to check out Blake. I have a great confidence that you're going to love that show. So, gentlemen, we want to thank both Robert and Blake for being here.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Fantastic, fun time.
Appreciate it.
Michael, it was great to see you again.
Thank you.
Where
as
do I
always.
Get to see you next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.